I don't know about you, but this year it seems no time at all since we were celebrating Jesus' nativity and birth. And suddenly today, it's the Sunday before the beginning of Lent, and we turn our eyes in a different direction and we start to look towards Easter. And this means that now and over the next 7 weeks, we begin to travel in our thoughts with Jesus from the Mount of Transfiguration to the glory of the cross and resurrection. And so today we're looking at the account of the Transfiguration in Luke's Gospel. And it's an interesting and exciting and challenging event. In fact, it's literally a high point in the Gospel story, as we've tried to demonstrate today by putting it in the highest point we can find here in our church. The Transfiguration was something very important in Jesus' life and ministry because it was a real turning point in that ministry. And in order to understand why it was a real turning point in Jesus' ministry, we have to put the story into context. Now, Philip's partly done that for us in his monologue there. But the story in the Bible begins by saying, about a week after he had said these things. So this is where Luke starts the story. Now, if he starts the story by saying about a week after, the obvious first question is, what happened the week before? Otherwise, we don't understand where it fits in. There must be some connection between the two things. And when we look back, of course, we find that the week before, Jesus and his disciples were in the area of Caesarea Philippi, and Peter, in response to a question from Jesus, had declared that he believed that Jesus was the Messiah. And Jesus then explained that the Messiah must suffer, that his disciples must be prepared to share that suffering, and that his suffering and theirs could be seen against a background of ultimate and certain glory. Now, surely that must have come as a big shock to the disciples. Until that time, Jesus hadn't mentioned suffering or death, and the disciples certainly weren't expecting a suffering Messiah. As disciples of Jesus, what on earth had they let themselves in for? From now on, they were going to start finding out that being a follower of Jesus would not be what they'd originally expected. Because from this point onwards, the gospel story tells us that Jesus shared with the disciples the difficult teaching about his forthcoming suffering and death and resurrection. And they were suddenly going to find themselves inevitably involved in it. Now, at this turning point then, Peter, John and James have a special prevision of the glory to come, and they hear a voice from heaven telling them to pay attention to God's Son. This is my Son, whom I have chosen. Listen to him. And these words immediately remind us that the transfiguration of Jesus is linked to his baptism too. At the baptism, Jesus had accepted God's commission to be the Messiah, the servant of the Lord, and you remember the voice from heaven then had confirmed that what he was doing was God's will. Now, as Jesus begins to share the secret of his calling with his disciples, the same voice comes to him to confirm his instructions. And so the Transfiguration must have been an important learning experience for the disciples, as it still is for us as disciples of Jesus today. listening to Jesus and following his way was what God wanted the disciples to do. But this meant that they were going to share in his suffering as well as his glory. Yes, God still invites us to listen to what Jesus had to say and to follow his way in our lives. But that, of course, doesn't mean that if we do so, there will never be a freedom from hard times, suffering, and difficulties. What it does mean is that when those hard times come, we can be sure that Jesus himself knows all about our suffering. He's been there before. He's promised to be with us and to help us through those hard times, any hard times that we have to cope with. Now, of course, the Transfiguration wasn't just a stage in the education of the disciples. It was a lot more than that. It must have been a real crisis in Jesus' own spiritual life too. And Luke draws our attention right at the beginning of the story here to the fact that, as usual, when Jesus was facing some kind of momentous time in his life and ministry, Jesus was praying. Jesus took Peter, John, and James with him and went up a hill to pray. And if Jesus needed to pray at each important step in his life, well, how much more do we too? Perhaps the fact that Jesus took with him the same three disciples who were going to go with him to Gethsemane later suggests that at this time too, he was expecting some kind of spiritual test, and he would be glad of the disciples' company. Even if, as we see again, the disciples were quite prone to fall asleep on the job. And it was while Jesus was praying that his clothes and his appearance changed and shone in a similar way to the way in which the Israelites of old had noticed that this happened to Moses. We were reminded in our second reading, Moses had covered his face with a veil because his face had shone brightly when he met face to face with God. And then suddenly, Moses and Elijah were there, talking with Jesus about the way in which Jesus would soon fulfill God's purpose by dying in Jerusalem. According to Luke's story, this was obviously not the first time Jesus had thought about his own death in the service of God. But for Jesus, as for any other human being, it must still have been painful, frightening, upsetting to be confronted with the fact that he was going to face rejection and face death, and it was going to happen in the very near future. The Greek word that Luke uses for dying here in his passage is unusual because it's the word, the same word that's used in the Old Testament for Exodus. And by doing that, it seems clear that Luke used it because of its Old Testament association with divine deliverance. By his death in Jerusalem, Jesus was going to accomplish what was a sort of new Exodus. The Exodus story in the Old Testament, when Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt through the desert and onward to the Promised Land, saved the Jews from slavery in Egypt. By his death and resurrection, Jesus would lead all of God's people, including all of us still today, from that greater bondage of sin and death into the Promised Land of God's kingdom. Jesus, we know, had always obeyed his Father. But so far in his ministry, the road that he'd travelled had been marked out in the Old Testament scriptures, and it had been marked out by prophets and other forerunners, by people like Moses and Elijah. But now God's about to lead Jesus onto a path never trodden by any other human being before. A path that's going to lead him to Gethsemane and onto Calvary. And in this way, as the writer of the letter to the Hebrews put it, Jesus alone would be the pioneer of our salvation. When they woke up, the disciples must have been astonished to see Jesus standing there with Moses and Elijah, each one a different kind of manifestation of God's glory. And Peter's immediate proposal was to build three tents for them. Now, of course, in the days of the Israelites' journey through the desert to the Promised Land, the Jews had lived in tents, or sometimes tabernacles, as they're called. And among those tents was a special one, which was the tent or the tabernacle of God himself. So Peter, maybe, was thinking back to the Old Testament times, and perhaps it wasn't such a silly suggestion as sometimes it looks out of the blue to us when we read it. Perhaps, too, it confirmed Peter's faith in Jesus as Messiah to see him with these two important people from Jewish history. Moses, who'd spoken with God as a man speaks to his friend, and whose face shone as he received the law from God. And Elijah, who at one time had stood alone as the only prophet in Israel who remained faithful to God. Both men were very special in Jewish history, and both men were believed to have been taken bodily to heaven instead of dying in the normal way like everybody else. But what Peter didn't realize was that both men at this time belonged to the old order of things that was passing away, and that a few minutes later, they will be gone, leaving Jesus alone. Because while Peter was speaking, a cloud appeared and covered them, and the disciples and Jesus fell under the great shadow of God's glory, where with Jesus they heard the heavenly voice. There was no need for three tabernacles. The disciples, who were later to become the founder members of the church, had caught a glimpse of that divine glory, which was now going to be gathered up in just one person, the person of Jesus himself. Jesus, who had set his face to go to Jerusalem, where he was going to fulfill God's purpose and plan of salvation by dying for each one of us there. So in this week before Lent, as we've thought again about the Transfiguration, we've been in thought with Jesus and his three companions and experienced the glory that will sustain their long journey to Jerusalem. And if we continue to look at the context, the next day we see that they came down from the mountain and straight back into the reality of the problems of ordinary life, just as we too sometimes, after a special spiritual experience or a feeling of being particularly close to God, have to come back down to earth again. Because the story is followed immediately by the story of the healing of a boy with an evil spirit. And that seems to have been put deliberately at the end, at the conclusion of the Transfiguration account, so that, powerless in the face of the evil spirit that's troubling the boy, the other disciples, and the boy's family and everybody else there at the time witnessed the greatness and power of God in Jesus' presence. And for all of us too, whatever our problems, our condition, our joys in life, we can be sure that Jesus will be faithful to his promise, and he will still be present with us in his spirit to help, to heal, to rejoice with us. And we can still witness the greatness of God's presence in Jesus in our lives day by day.